Chapter 44. In the weeks that followed the summit on Rau Roost, Luke spent endless hours walking through the Boris forests, sometimes with Mara when she and Lobaka weren't effecting repairs to Jade Shadow, but more often on his own, roaming and reflecting, the hood of his cloak raised against the cold and his hands thrust deeply into the opposite sleeves. His body seemed to have struck a compromise with the traces of venom that were still circulating through his bloodstream, but his mind was still struggling to find a similar balance. Sometimes he would confront voids in the Force where there shouldn't have been any, and at other times the Force would seem to expand infinitely around him, heightening his perceptions beyond all expectation, or surprising him with prolonged visions of possible futures. For a brief time during the summit on Rau Roost, he had been able to perceive Nas Choka and Harar with the same clarity Jason described when he spoke of his Vong sense. Cal Omis and the Alliance leadership had expressed their gratitude to the Jedi for finding a practical solution to the war. But now that the terms of surrender had been ratified and the Yuuzhan Vong had been disarmed, the Alliance had ceased asking Luke for advice or assistance. The reconstruction of Coruscant had commenced with a great deal of fanfare, in conjunction with a grand memorial service for Admiral Ackbar, and the inauguration of a new holonet. Jason had traveled to Coruscant to confer with the Yuuzhan Vong shapers, who had been entrusted with mapping out an accord with the World Brain. Initially, the Doryam was averse to tampering with any of its creations, but thanks to Jason, it had agreed to allow the Alliance to excavate the sacred precinct with an eye toward restoring those New Republic structures that had survived. In the course of the excavations, vast amounts of serviceable technology had been discovered. But it would be decades before Coruscant would be suitable for anyone other than structural engineers and construction droids. Until then, the Galactic Alliance government was to be headquartered at Denon, a heavily populated inner rim world that had risen to prominence during the Old Republic era and, more important, had escaped bombardment or occupation by the Yuuzhan Vong. Nas Choka had succeeded in recalling many but not all of his commanders from occupied worlds. Every few days, word would reach Zonama Seacoat of a costly skirmish in one star system or another. On Coruscant, too, many commanders had surrendered, though rumors persisted, and would probably continue to persist, of bands of Yuuzhan Vong warriors hiding out in the dense temperate forests of the Northern Hemisphere. Instead of returning to normal, the galaxy was slowly changing. Having been crowned a hero, even by his own Bothans, Admiral Trieste Creefe had assumed the rank of Supreme Commander of Alliance Forces, following the unexpected resignation of Seen Sav. Diff Scour, the impetus behind Alpha Red, was also gone, gently forced into early retirement by Cal Omis, and replaced as Director of Intelligence by Belindi Kalenda. Omis had assured Luke that all stores of the bioweapon had been destroyed, along with the genetic blueprint itself, since there were many who felt that the Alliance had been too compassionate with the enemy. Several species that had endured the brunt of the invasion were still demanding that the entire warrior caste be executed, an act of reprisal even Omis might have sanctioned were it not for Nas Choka's steadfast willingness to oblige. Still, no one wanted to risk a sudden recanting by the Warmaster. So, immediately following the summit, all Yuuzhan Vong warriors had been transferred to the bellies of several star destroyers and troop transports, and the vessels that had comprised the mighty alien armada had been launched into Coruscant's sun, carrying with them all weapons of war. On Zonama Seacoat, repair work to the cliff dwellings and other damaged structures continued day and night. The Faroans were nonplussed by Seacoat's willingness to bestow half of Zonama on the species that had tried to destroy it. But except for a few of the younger Faroans who had decided to depart, most of the indigenous population had simply resigned themselves to Seacoat's decision. Luke had been awaiting an opportunity to gather all the Jedi in one place, and was finally able to do that when Errant Venture returned to Zonama Seacote, bearing the children and other Jedi from the Maw. He gave everyone a day to mingle and catch up, then requested that everyone assemble at the forest clearing where the first coral skippers had been brought to ground. In groups of 3 and 4, the Jedi arrived until all were present, including Luke, Mara, Markra Medjev, Kean Farlander, Tam Azar Jaman, Octa Ramus, Trasina Lobi, Kenth Hamner, Silgal, Kip Duran, Clin Fagai, Tenel Ka, Madurin, Streen, Jason, Jaina, Cam and Tion Solusar, Zek, Lobaka, Saba and Tisar Sebatine, Izal Waz, Corin Horn, Kirana Tai, Tekli, Alima Rar, Kyle Katarn, Waxarn Kel, Tresk Imnil, Wuntun, Hivrech Walcheklev, Tyria Sarkin and Doran Sarkin Tainer, Tahiri Vela, Sana, and the children, including Ben, Valen, Jaisella, and some 20 others. When everyone was settled, Luke stepped to the center of the large circle his friends and comrades had formed. Several of the children sat cross-legged on the loamy soil, others atop the grounded coral skippers. Ben sat contentedly on Mara's lap. "The Yuuzhan Vong will begin arriving in the coming weeks," Luke began, pacing while he spoke. "The first collaborative act between them and Seacote will be to restore the Southern Hemisphere forests, which were incinerated by the original reconnaissance team 50 years ago. By working with the Boris, the Yuuzhan Vong will gradually get to know Zonama. And at the same time, Seacote will gradually get to know the Yuuzhan Vong. Their acceptance by Seacote will constitute a second chance for a species that nearly doomed itself to extinction." He stopped momentarily. "Now that we finally know what the Force wanted for the Yuuzhan Vong, it's time to ask what the Force wants for us." He gestured to his nephew. "Jason has already accomplished more than any of us could to speed the rebuilding of Coruscant, and I don't see it as our duty to devote ourselves entirely to shoring up the Galactic Alliance as it takes its first wobbly steps toward becoming a true coalition. Our mandate to safeguard peace and justice remains, but we have to be wary of any who attempt to define peace and justice by their own terms. Should that happen, our mandate may require us to transcend the jurisdiction of any central government. I suppose we could consider initiating our own reconstruction efforts at Yavin 4, but I don't see much purpose in that task, either, since the days of the Jedi Praxium are behind us. Yavin 4 had its place, but there are countless worlds where the Force is strong, and any one of them can serve as a kind of academy." Luke gestured to Cam Solusar. "Cam has suggested that we give thought to relocating to Ossus, and I'm inclined to agree with him. But the real territory we're compelled to explore is the unifying Force, as a step toward implementing a new Jedi Order." Luke fell silent for a long moment as he paced across the circle and back again. "On Ithor, I surrendered guardianship of the Jedi. That doesn't mean that I can't still serve as a mentor and guide to some of you. Yoda instructed me to pass on what I have learned, and I mean to do just that. But others here are as equipped as I am to teach, and I encourage them to do so, should they choose to pursue that path. But here's what I wish to say to all of you. If I have learned anything from the events of the past 5 years, it is that the Force is more all-embracing than I ever realized. Light and dark do not always stand opposed, but mingle with each other in curious ways. More important, the Force seems to have a will, and it's when we're acting against the will of the Force that we can get into trouble. Anger by itself is not of the dark side, unless it is accompanied by a desire to dominate. When we act in harmony with the will of the Force, we disappear into it. When we struggle against it, we not only sever our ties with the Force, but also feed the needs of chaos. The evolution of sentience reflects the constant movement between those two poles. Evil, the dark side, won't be eradicated until it has been discarded as an option for acquiring power, subjugating would-be opponents, or offsetting feelings of anger, envy, or exclusion. Where victims of injustice exist, the dark side finds initiates. That is the cycle our actions are meant to forestall, and in this battle, the force is both our ally and our guardian. We serve it best by listening to its will and serving the good with our every action, by personifying the force. But I'm no longer convinced that we're meant to police the galaxy. For one thing, we're too few in number. That was made evident early in the war, and it's likely to hold true for whatever conflicts erupt in the coming years. The Jedi began as a meditative order. Our forebears believed that they could balance light and dark by remaining always in the Force, and thereby perfecting themselves. Gradually, however, as the Supreme Chancellors appealed to the Order time and again for advice in resolving disputes, the Jedi became adjuncts of the Old Republic, then marshals and warriors, taking it upon themselves to uphold the peace, and little by little being drawn away from the Force and into the mundane. I don't propose that we place ourselves in seclusion and pass our days meditating on the Force, though that might be the path for some of us. But I do advocate attuning ourselves to the longer view and reaching out to others who seek to serve the Force. The genetic makeup of each and every one of us augments our ability to tap the Force. But everyone, regardless of his or her genetics, has the potential to use the Force to one degree or another. Perhaps not to move rocks and take giant strides, but in some sense, those physical powers are little more than surface effects. The real powers are more subtle, for they involve adhering to the true path, avoiding the temptation to dominate, sacrificing oneself for those who have less, and living impeccably, by recognizing that the Force doesn't flow from us, but through us, ever on the move. Luke scanned the sea of faces. Like our damaged galaxy, the new Jedi Order will require generations to define itself. Some of us have already committed to the roles we will play in that process. Kip, Silgal, Saba, Kenth, Trasina, and I will continue to serve on Cal Omis's advisory council and be the voice of the Force. He glanced at the tall Ankh Jedi. I know that Madurin has decided to remain in service to Supreme Commander Kreefei and Kian Farlander, and that Tenel Ka will return to the Hapes Consortium. Kirana Tai, Damaya, and Streen have much work to do on Dathomir, and Cam, Tion, and several others are eager to go to Assus. Again his gaze swept around the circle. As for the rest of you, I ask only that you give deep thought as to how you might best serve the Force. With the lifting of Seacoast stricture regarding warships on Zonama's surface, the western rim of the Middle Distance Canyon had become a landing and launch zone. The Millennium Falcon was parked there, as was Jade Shadow, along with the few Seacoastan fighters and the several shuttles that had carried the Jedi adults and children from Errant Venture. Dressed in a black sin fleece jacket, stylish trousers, a rakish cap, and fingerless gloves, Lando meandered with design among the ships, spotting Han at last, seated at a table with Talon, Booster, and Krev Bombassa, in an open-fronted shed built of Seacoastan lamina. The three men were as bundled up as Lando was, and their amiable laughter rode out on short-lived breath clouds. "Where is everybody?" Lando asked when he joined them. "This place is as quiet as a convention of devils." "Big meeting in the Boris," Han said offhandedly. Lando grinned and prized a bottle of expensive Corellian brandy from his coat pocket. "Perfect time for us to warm our bones. Besides, there's just enough to go around." Han rubbed his bare hands together in anticipation. "Wasn't I just saying that cantinas are in very short supply around here?" Krev glanced around in wariness. Maybe you should keep your voice low, you know, in case someone's listening. Booster tugged at his beard. It is a little spooky, isn't it? Talon gazed at the canyon and the distant tree line. Now that you mention it. Lando put his hands on his hips and laughed. I doubt that Seacoat would begrudge us a toast or two. From the jacket's other pouch pocket, he extracted 5 tumblers. Lining them up on the table, he began to fill them with the aromatic amber liquid. So, what do you think Luke and the rest are talking about?
Same thing that's on everyone's mind, Krebs said with theatrical seriousness. Han Solo.
Han laughed with them, then raised his glass. I'll drink to that. The glass was almost to his mouth when a male voice said, Got enough for 2 party crashers? The 5 of them turned to see Wedge and Tycho hurrying toward them, sporting flight jackets and brimmed caps. With their customary sense of flawless timing, Han muttered. Reluctantly, Lando pulled 2 more tumblers from his pocket, filled them, and passed them down the table. Anyone else is going to have to provide his own glass.
And brandy, Krebs said.
Talon shook his head and sighed. I've yet to meet a military man who's actually willing to pay for a drink. Tycho snorted.
I've never met one who has to pay.
Wedge lifted his glass. I'll drink to that. They all took long sips, smacked their lips, and set the tumblers down. Anyway, Tycho continued, that's ex-military, as of tomorrow.
Han raised an eyebrow. Skulking back into retirement, huh?
Tycho shrugged. It's either that or Winter leaves me.
She must have been talking with Iella, Wedge said.
It's a conspiracy. Han raised his glass again. To last flings. They sipped, then fell silent for a moment. Wedge fingered the tumbler through a circle. I don't know about the rest of you, but I'm ready for the simple life again. The Alliance will just have to make do with guys like Darklighter, Page, and Kraken.
Pity the Alliance, Tycho said.
Han regarded the 2 of them and laughed. The familiar strains of midlife. Tycho jerked his thumb at Han without looking at him. This from a guy who refuses to go quietly into the void.
Not true, Han said. It's the Falcon that keeps leading me into trouble.
Booster nodded soberly. I'm beginning to think the same of Errant Venture. Next time maybe you should choose a different shade of red, Talon said. They laughed and downed what remained in the glasses. Lando was quick to refill them, emptying the bottle. So what's next for you guys? Tycho asked the 4 members of the Smuggler's Alliance.
We're waiting for the dust to settle, Talon said. And I don't mean the Yorick coral dust. Everything from here to Helska and back has been given a good shaking. A lot of groups that were at the top are suddenly at the bottom and the other way around.
Who, for instance? Tycho said.
Talon considered it briefly.
Well, at the top you've got Bothans, chiefly because of Phalia's brave last stand and Crefay's heroic victory. But vying for 2nd place are the Sullustans, Hapens, the former Imperials, the Mon Calamari.
Who do you figure has fallen? Wedge asked.
Everyone rimward of Wayland. Plus the Athorians, Bims, Kuwadi, Corellians. But more than anyone, the Hutts.
Lando nodded. A lot of folk were forced to do without spice during the war, and have lost their appetite for it. In fact, just about anyone who had regular dealings with the Hutts has lost credibility. The Rhodians, except for the Jungle Clans, Whiffids, Clatuinians, Weequays, Vodrans, Eotrans, Nikto, didn't help that a lot of them supported the Peace Brigade.
They're the ones who should be brought to trial for war crimes, Booster said.
They will be, Wedge said. Cal Omis has left the decision to individual worlds and systems.
Who else is on the way up?
Tycho asked.
Corporate sector and Tyan hegemony, Talon said, without having to think about it. Just about every system rimward of Eriadu on the Rima and Varanat on the trade spine.
Lando looked at Han. I'll tell you who's gained the most. Your friends, the Rim.
Han sniffed. Figures Droma would come out of this smelling like a flower. He paused, then added, Of course, knowing Droma, he's somewhere saying the same about me.
Yeah, Tycho said. We didn't think you could become a bigger hero than you already were, old man.
Wedge smiled. Someday they'll raise a statue. Han held up his hands. I've already heard that one from Leia. Besides, every world, every system's contributed a hero to this war. He put his elbows on the table and leaned forward.
I haven't told this to anyone, but I swear on the Falcon that I saw Fett at Kalula, and he did as much as anyone to try to save that station from the Vong.
Lando was staring at him in disbelief.
As in Boba?
Of course, Boba. Running with a bunch of other guys in Mandalorian armor and jetpacks. He even managed to come up with a new fire spray. Talon touched his mustache.
Well, I wasn't going to say anything, but I heard that that same bunch showed up to help liberate Ord Mantell.
And Thalaton, Krev said.
And Gindyne, Booster added. Lando shook his head as if to clear it.
Hey, if Pelion can be considered an ally, why not a former bounty hunter?
Han glanced from Lando to Talon. You're the people that deserve statues. But I suppose that'll have to wait until Wollum Tser or someone does a holodocumentary about the Notorious Smugglers Alliance.
That would be ex-Smugglers Alliance, Talon said.
Han rolled his eyes. It's true, Han. We've mended our ways.
Seen the light, Booster said.
Come around, Krev added.
Reformed, Lando said.
Tycho looked around the table.
Anyone want to add another cliché?
How about gotten too old for this, Han said.
Wedge nodded. That'll do.
Han glanced at Lando and Talon again.
What, Tendra and Shada are making honest men of you?
Talon shook his head firmly. Shada and I are business partners. That's it.
Lando grinned at Han. Hey, it was your wife who wrote the book on the subject.
Everyone laughed, then raised their tumblers. To the war's true unsung heroes, Han said. The spouses. When he had set down his glass, he turned back to Lando. Seriously, Lando, what's the game plan?
Let me put it this way. With the need for so much rebuilding of worlds, governments, trading routes, and new markets opening in the Imperial Remnant, Chiss space, even parts of the unknown regions, there'll be no shortage of opportunities for people motivated more by philanthropy than profit.
To our noble selves, Tycho said, toasting with the final sip.
Few of us left.
Finishing the drinks, the seven of them slammed the tumblers on the table.
More by philanthropy than profit, Han repeated.
Taking a deep breath, he leaned his crude chair away from the table and gazed about him.
I swear, this crazy place is having an effect on everyone.
I already know that Tahiri and Tetley want to return to the unknown regions with Zonama Seacote,
Jaina told Jason as they were returning from the meeting. Most of the Jedi were proceeding directly to the canyon, but the twins were taking the long way back to their temporary shelter on the cliffside.
Tekly believes she can learn a lot from the Yuuzhan Vong Shapers, assuming they're willing to teach her. And Tahiri, well, I think she just wants to explore more of the Yuuzhan Vong side of her nature, of Rena.
I know someone else who plans to remain here, Jason said.
Danny, Jaina said.
Jason nodded.
Before the war, all that interested her was the search for an extragalactic species. But the only one she practically discovered single-handedly she knows only as an enemy. She told me she has as much to unlearn as learn.
Is that going to be hard for you? Saying goodbye to her?
I'm happy for her.
He glanced at his sister.
Anyway, I'll always know where to find her.
I didn't think of that.
Jaina became thoughtful for a moment, then said,
Corin, Mirax, and the kids are going to Corellia for a while.
You think Mom and Dad will go there? Jaina shook her head in uncertainty.
I've no idea what those two have up their sleeves. But what about you, Jason?
I know what I don't want to do. I don't want to be part of an order or a select group. I don't want to be looked to as the guiding light of the new fealty. And I don't want to be surrounded by students who will ask more of me that I can explain. Most of all, I don't want to be an object of fascination or admiration, because that'll only distract me from what I really need to learn. I don't have dreams of being a lightsaber master or an ace starfighter pilot, and I'm not on a campaign to change anyone or anything, except myself, maybe, just to clear away some of the confusion that's built up.
You sound like Seacoat, Jaina said.
She gestured broadly to the giant trees.
You wouldn't want to stay here? Among all this?
I can't, because every part of me is desperate to stay, and I'm worried that I'd never leave.
So, you're going to wander the galaxy or something?
If that's where the Force leads me. But right now, I think I'd like to spend time among some of the other Force users.
The Jansari, the Theran listeners, the Sunesi. Maybe even try to find out where the Falanasi disappeared to.
Jason laughed, clearly at himself.
Anakin's probably ridiculing me for even thinking of going on a quest for answers. He'd probably say that I'd do better just to plant myself under one of these Boras and wait for the answers to find me, instead of roaming around trying to find them. His voice took on a note of sadness.
I wish I could see him, Jaina, but I can perceive him. I carry him around with me, the way some people do a hololocket. I regret so many of the arguments we had, and so many of the wrong-headed decisions I made, but they were the best I could manage at the time. It'd be easy to say I wished we'd never gone to Mirker, but if we hadn't gone, then none of us might have survived the Voxen. There would have been no one to find Zonama Seacoat, no chance for the Alliance or the Yuuzhan Vong. It would have been a battle to the death, with no winners.
Jaina kept silent until she was certain he was through.
Anakin was such a special person that even now it doesn't seem fair that he should have been the one to die. I know that fairness has nothing to do with it, but I'll never get over his death, just the way he might never have been able to get over Chewie's death. I never had any real doubts that I'd survive the war, but my worst fear was that I'd survive without you, Mom, and Dad. I didn't want to live after Mirker, Jason. If you had died there, I don't think I could have gone on. I wouldn't have just become the Sword of the Jedi, but the Sword the Jedi would have been sorry they'd forged. I would have made the Kip who destroyed Kirita look like a simple scoundrel.
Jason whistled in relief. What about Kip, now that we have survived?
I don't know, I really don't. He's been something of a mentor, in the same way Mara has.
She brought her right forefinger and thumb close together.
I thought for about this long that I could actually feel something for him. But falling in love with your mentor isn't a sane thing to do, because you're not really seeing the person. You're seeing the statue on the pedestal. You're worshipping the idea.
The way Jag does with you?
Jag doesn't worship me.
Now that he's gotten to know you, you mean? Jaina smacked her brother on the arm.
Even though you're right, the thing is, I don't want to be at the center of anything, either. I know that Uncle Luke and Aunt Mara would like to see me mentor some of the young students. Maybe even Ben. But Cam and Tion have bonded with the kids much better than I ever could. Anyway, I don't want to be too far from the action.
She looked at Jason.
I have too much of Mom and Dad in me to give up fighting for peace and justice.
Especially now that you've gotten so good at it. Jaina snorted ruefully.
That's the real problem, right? When it starts to come easy? You just have to avoid the killing part of it.
Unfortunately, that's part of the starfighter pilot job description.
So find some other way to satisfy your need for speed and action. I hear pod racing's making a comeback. Jaina laughed heartily.
It's in our blood, anyway.
More than the military is. I mean, Dad just about got drummed out, Mom was a rebel, and our paternal grandparents were...
What?
Jaina shook her head.
I don't know. But some people say that important traits tend to skip a generation.
Streaking a cloudless azure sky, a dozen ships of motley design and capability soared high over Zonama Seacoat and gradually disappeared from sight.
Everyone's leaving R2,
C-3PO said in a wistful tone.
They're returning to their homeworlds, or going in search of missing friends. Masters Lobaka, Sebatine, Katarn, Zek, and Azur Jaman, Mistresses Rar, Ramus, and Karana Tai. The children. I already missed them.
4 days had passed since the Jedi gathering, and the two droids were standing on the simple terrace that fronted Luke and Mara's cliff-dwelling in the middle distance. The Skywalkers were completing repair work on Jade Shadow, and Han, Leia, and the Nogri had gone to Coruscant on unstated business. R2-D2 chittered a short reply.
Of course I realize that we'll be seeing everyone again, R2, but under very different circumstances.
The astromech fluted in a long-suffering way, and C-3PO tilted his head to one side.
You can be the most infuriating little droid. I am fully aware of my need to adapt to change. But that needn't interfere with my ability to express sadness over the closing of an era.
R2-D2 issued a flurry of buzzes, zithers, and hoots.
I know it was a war, you mechanic, and I also realize that it was a war that threatened our existence far more than any other war has. But that's precisely the point, because for a moment we became as valuable as they were. As often as they fought with us, they fought for us.
R2-D2 made a more decorous reply.
You're correct, R2. They do need us, but they need us in a good way.
C-3PO listened for a moment, then said,
A far more dangerous enemy? Who or what could possibly be more dangerous than the Yuuzhan Vong?
R2-D2 warbled.
Obsolescence?
After mulling it over, the protocol droid loosed what amounted to a sigh.
Perhaps I am deluding myself. With all the advances that have been made in droid technology, I suppose we are in danger of being considered obsolete. But what are we to do, R2? Retirement isn't an option for us. We will continue as relics of a sort, passed along to new masters until our parts can no longer be replaced, or until we suffer some irreparable system failure. Oh, it's all very bittersweet, I think is the proper word.
R2-D2's response was a surprisingly cheery burst of squeaks and peeps.
Do you really believe that life will remain as unpredictable as ever, and that our adventures will continue? I hope so, my little friend, even if they don't quite measure up to adventures we've had, and even if they are lacking a dash of the old enchantment.
R2-D2 made a razzing sound.
What do you mean? I used to say that all the time. Just what are you going on about?
C-3PO paused, then said,
I don't mind at all that it's a long story. After all, R2, we have nothing but time.